ladies and gentlemen, to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is David Ellis, and for the last little while, my right-hand man has been overseas having a summer of prog, doing all the things that make all of us jealous, but I am pleased to say that he is back behind the microphone in his western capital of Perth, and he is joining me as always, and business is back to usual right now. So, Alex, welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Yeah, I heard you had an absolute baller of a time, and we are going to get onto that, I suppose, I think in the next episode, aren't we? We're going to get onto that.
Yes, my plan, well, the plan is for this one is we're going to be releasing two episodes. Mm-hmm. So this show is like our quote-unquote regular show, mm-hmm. and the other show will be me talking about all the fantastic and interesting bands that I was seeing over the summertime. So if you want to hear that, jump to the other show.
However, I implore you to listen to both.
Absolutely.
Because who doesn't like listening us waffle on about things?
And we have a huge show.
We have a massive show this week.
We've talked about it many times on Facebook. Later on in this show, we will be doing the interview with Dream Theater's James LeBrie. I was very fortunate to be able to sit down and do an interview with him over the phone while I was in Bulgaria and while he was in Greece.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. And between the two of us now, we've only got one to go. We've got Myung, and we've done all five.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've interviewed John and Mike and Jordan.
Yep.
I've got Jay. Yeah, so John, yeah.
We've got one
just
to go.
Very quickly as well, before we get into it, big thanks to Dream Theatre's management for getting that one sorted out.
Oh, absolutely.
It involved, you should have seen my podcasting record set up to do that one. It was insane.
Should have taken a photo of it and posted it to the Twitter.
I should have. What I had to ring Dream Theater's management in America, and then they patched the call through to James's hotel in Greece, and then we could talk to do the interview. So big thanks to them for sorting that one out and agreeing to have you on the show.
Absolutely.
So I thought I'd get that one done, get the thanks up front straight away.
Absolutely.
And then we'll jump into some follow-up.
Absolutely.
Unless you had something else to say, Dave?
No, not at all. I think we've only got really one piece of follow-up here. And you've got written down here, X-ray audio records on old X-rays. We were talking about this, weren't we?
Yes, this came up, I think, on our very first show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have at hand who sent this to me. Someone sent this to me. A website that actually has vinyl records on X-rays from inside Soviet Russia.
That's really cool. X-ray audio, the Bureau, by the Bureau of Lost Culture. I've just pulled it up on here. This is really cool, actually. This is brilliant.
So if you're intrigued by our discussions of X-ray audio, have a look at this website and you can have a listen to some of the quality of the audio there.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really, really cool website. Need to check that out. Something else that we've talked about, we've sort of talked about this quite a lot on the show, is how much artists don't get paid these days. And in the last sort of about week or two, there's been sort of a bit of a hullabaloo around this with Corey Taylor, the lead singer of Slipknot, obviously. Actually, sort of going out of his way and tweeting that, you know, streaming is pricing artists out of careers, which is exactly right. And there was actually a thing on Facebook this morning that you tagged me in, Hoggy, with a thing saying you buy a shirt, one shirt is worth something like 200 hours of streaming or something to an artist.
I don't think it was 200 hours. I think it was like 200 individual or 2,000 individual streams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
This has been, and I've shared something else as well. This came from Anil Prasad over at interviews. He put together something to work out that like actually buying a CD is worth something like 500 Spotify streams or some crazy high number. Actually, I'm going to pull it up because I need to. Need to get the numbers right here because it was insane. The numbers are insane.
It's huge news as well. I mean,
So the numbers here, it was one CD or vinyl sale earns more income than for an artist than 200 hours of streaming.
Yeah, wow.
That is insane. $25 album earns the same amount of as about the royalties paid on 5,000 track streams. That is insane. So if a t-shirt costs about the same, we're probably looking at about the same number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, $20-$25 for a t-shirt, you know. Unless you're, you know, for a big band, you know, sometimes they sell their t-shirts for $50, so, you know, double it. One $50 t-shirt is 10,000 streamings.
But I've said this numerous times, and I've said this to you. I've said this, I think, on the podcast as well. I would rather stream the music, right? And I've been saying this for years. I would rather stream the music for, you know, on Spotify, or it's cost me $12 a month or something, and then I'll go to the show and I'll drop, you know, $150 in merch. Because yes, that's a way better way to support the artist. And I have been saying this for years, and now people are coming out and going, oh, that's what you do. It's like, no shit, Sherlock. Like,
yeah.
Seriously. Like, not trying to big note, but like, duh. You know?
It just seems like the obvious thing to do.
100%. I mean, Steph and I, as you know, we hit up the Dead of Winter Festival, and we saw Voyager and Chaos Divine in Sydney the following night. Both of those gigs, I spent about $150 in merch up in Brisbane, and then down here I bought a shirt and Steph bought a shirt as well. So, you know, it wasn't quite as much. It was only two sort of headliners. So, you know,
yeah,
what is what it is, and you've got to be careful with your spending and all that sort of stuff, especially in Sydney. But, you know, it's a much better way to do it. And I remember we ran into the Opus of a Machine Boys, because one of the shirts I bought was an Opus shirt. And afterwards, here's a really interesting statistic for you, actually, and something that we mentioned. I think we may have mentioned it on the podcast when Steph and I did our Dead of Winter wrap-up. But I was talking to the boys after the show at the end of the night from Opus, and there was Zach and a couple of the other guys there, and we were yakking away. And he said, oh, yeah, awesome, we sold like four shirts tonight. And I've gone, well, I bought one of them. And I showed him, and he went, oh, thanks. Like, thank you so much. He was really appreciative of it. But four shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Four.
Yep.
Right? If they sold 10, right, over the course of the night, and it was hands down the coolest looking one there, right? And I know it's a bit subjective because, you know, everything's a little bit, you know, you've got to sort of figure out what you would like to wear as well.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, if there are any bands listening, can we get some shirts that are in some nice colors? Like, they don't always have to be black with the band logo. You know what I mean?
The whole t-shirt thing, that's a whole other subject we could disappear down a rabbit hole in, because
I have some
rather strong opinions about band t-shirts, but we'll park that because we'll lose the whole show to it.
But yeah, so I mean, it's a nice, you know, it's nice, but that number was so shocking to me. It's like, you sold four. You should be selling like 15. What the fuck?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just absurd.
Yeah. But to bring it back to what Corey Taylor was saying, somebody asked him, someone was responding, is like, you know, what's the main source of income for you? Obviously, you're not making any money out of selling records anymore. Everybody knows that. He said, I assume it's touring and merch. Mm-hmm. And his response was, we have to tour. It's the only way we can make a living. And merch companies are making it hand over fist because, you know, the merch companies are making the lion's share. Streaming is pricing artists, old and new, out of the career. So this isn't you know, oh, the new artists are getting it in the ass. Old art, the established acts are getting it in the neck as well.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Someone, the other thing as well, someone said that, you know, your record, you know, all the major record labels are the ones who are at fault here. And he's and your contract is shit. You should have renegotiated your contract because, you know, that's how that works. And
yeah,
his response was, all due respect, this isn't about contracts right now because they don't reflect the service righteously. And even if the streaming service pays the label, we still don't get paid.
That's
about publishing. They are offering our work and not paying for it.
That's right.
And then, you know, the inevitable next question from someone was, so why not pull your music? And his response was, because if you don't own your masters, you could do fuck all to stop what labels do.
That's right.
Which should be no surprise to anybody.
No.
You know,
most
artists don't actually own their own music unless you're like Marillion, Robert Fripp, or an independent musician.
Or Dream Theater.
I don't think Dream Theater own their own masters either, to be honest.
No, they do.
I know they definitely don't own the first record. They lost that one.
They lost that one, but all the rest, from what I understand, because they had so many issues with all the record labels and everything like that, they actually negotiated that they wanted to hang on to everything. I believe. I may be wrong about that. And if there's anyone out there who knows that, by all means, hit us up. Tweet at us.
Yeah, get in touch. I know. Well, actually, sorry, that's a lot. I was going to say I need to correct myself here. Marillion don't own everything. They owned all the stuff that they've published themselves, which I think from memory is either from .com or Anarachnophobia forwards. All the stuff they made in the 80s with EMI, they don't own a cent of that.
That doesn't surprise me.
Because, well, no, the thing was when they signed their contract in 83, they gave all that up so they could retain artistic control. That's the killer.
Yeah.
They gave away everything. They signed up to bad royalties, you know, all the trappings of a major, bad royalties, lots of advances, blah, 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 to retain artistic control.
Can you imagine if that had happened to people like, you know, Paul McCartney or the Beatles?
Oh, the ownership of the Beatles' music is a whole other rabbit hole we can get down into,
absolutely.
The fact that Michael Jackson owned it or still owns it, some portion of it.
Well, I was going to say he probably doesn't, but his estate might.
Yeah. I think that's still the case. I don't know if he sold that at some point, but yeah.
Don't know.
The ownership of the Beatles' music is a whole other rabbit hole we can go down.
Yeah, weird.
Mm-hmm.
But that's sort of the sad reality of everything that's sort of going on in the music industry around the world at the moment. So people, if you're listening to this, for God's sake, go out and support the industry. Go to the shows, buy their merch.
Buy records.
Absolutely.
Actually buy music.
But buy it, if you can, buy it directly from them. Don't buy it from the CD shop. You know, as much
sometimes, sometimes you don't always have an option. We can get to this.
We can actually mention this because I think the next big piece of, I think we should probably head over to the news.
Yes, absolutely.
And mention the biggest piece of news that's happened whilst you're away.
Yeah, we should. We need to discuss this. Now, there's a reason why I'm introducing this next news segment, and you might remember a few shows ago, my skepticism towards the new Tool record.
Oh, yeah.
And how I publicly said on the show that I will donate $100 to your friend Matt Blackshaw's charity of choice. I was going to donate $100 if the new Tool record came out. Well, son of a bitches, they actually reduced. They released a single, and now I'm out $100. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. They could have just done it one day late, and you would have been all right. Mind you, the album isn't exactly out yet, so far as I'm concerned, you're still in the clear for another 21 days at time of recording.
Well, I don't know. When they've got pre-orders up on the internet, at this point, it's kind of the game's over, I think.
This is true. However, the thoughts on the actual pre-orders and such are sort of a bit of a mixed bag, and thoughts on the single as well, because, you know, all prog heads are whinging. Just everyone whinges about something. But the purchasing options are very interesting.
So what are they all whinging about this time, Dave?
God. It's not Tool. It's not what I expected. It's not, you know, as Dream Theater says in that song, Never Enough, you know, everything is never enough. Mm-hmm. You know, they've finally released a new album after 14 years and these wankers are running around going, oh, it doesn't sound like I expected it. No, because their last album was 14 years ago and they've all... It's 14 years on, guys. You can't... It'd be like asking, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis or something to write a new album right now and they're expecting it's going to sound exactly like it did back in the whenevers.
Well,
you know,
friend of the show, Josh Batten, made a really interesting point here. He compared this to the 14-year wait for the video game Duke Nukem Forever. Because people will wait, like, lots of people really like Duke Nukem. No idea why, personally, but that's my opinion. And they could have, anything short of, like, I don't know, Jesus Christ himself coming down from the mount wasn't going to satisfy the people who've been sitting around waiting 14 years for that video game. I kind of feel the same way about this record. There are going to be very unhappy no matter what comes out.
The other thing to consider as well about this is it's not just the artists and so on and so forth that have moved on. The world's moved on as well. So if you take the Duke Nukem example, right, that macho bravado, womanizing, sexist stuff that was going on in that video game at that time was a product of its time, and it was actually really funny. And it was a groundbreaking video game, right? It was one of, if not the first, first-person shooter, et cetera, the first 3D first-person shooter and such. It was a very, very groundbreaking video game, and for the content and such as well in there. It was a great game.
And here we are 14 years later, and the only way that you could embrace that sort of macho power fantasy is by doing it tongue-in-cheek.
100%.
Or playing it up for laughs. There's no 100%. Way you could do that totally 100% straight.
Exactly.
Like, and that's... I'll give another example as well. When I first saw the movie, I forgot the name of the damn thing. The one with Stallone and Schwarzenegger and all the rest of them. Was it The Untouchables? The Expendables?
The Expendables.
The Expendables, right. So when I first saw The Expendables, I thought it was a parody. But apparently, it's supposed to be 100% straight.
I think the first one was...
You think the first one was a little bit sort of wink-wink?
And then they realized that after that people were thinking that it was a parody more than it was actually a straight movie. So they just
run with it anyway. And they got Statham and Terry Crews and all the people, all the big guys from the 80s in there. I think even Jean-Claude Van Damme turned up in one of them.
Yeah, I think in the third one from memory. And the third one was just ridiculous over... I mean, all of it's ridiculous over the top because it was based on 80s action movies where everything explodes by looking at it.
Yeah.
But that's exactly it. So people are sort of whinging about, you know, the new sound of the new Tool song. I don't agree with it. I actually love it. I think it's absolutely awesome. I didn't even realize it had dropped, and you sent me the message and went, "Here's the new thing. I guess I owe someone $100 now."
it's literally true. You didn't even know. I had seen it because I had seen, I think, it's like, I thought the first one I thought, oh yeah, someone's done what they normally, like, you know, they'll link to a thing and it's a Rickroll or something. But I clicked on it and I'm like, oh no, really, this is the new Tool single.
Well, I just assumed
someone was Rickrolling me, but no.
Well, that was the thing. I looked at it and went, because you sent it to me, and I know full well that you wouldn't send it if it was at least legitimate-ish. And you'd probably send me, it's like, is this legit kind of thing? And I clicked on it and went, oh, this is probably one of those ones where someone's recorded stuff over the top and said it's by the official Tool thing. No, this is real. Okay. You know, and it's a phenomenal song. I absolutely, it's technical. It's everything that Tool is in a 10-minute or 11-minute package. You know, it's brutally good. I love it. Okay, it's not like the pot. It doesn't have that sort of awesome groove to it or anything like that, but it's still got the elements of Tool. And I think they're going back a little bit further rather than the last album or Lateralis. They're sort of heading back into that earlier Anima kind of stuff from what I can hear, obviously with better recording ability. So I like it. If people don't like it, that's their prerogative. But let's be honest, you're going to still buy the album anyway, so stop whinging about it.
Well, are you though? Because at the moment, unless this is like a leak and some hilarious troll, there are only... two versions of the album that are available. Mm-hmm. One is a really fancy version, which comes with a CD in a tri-fold soft pack video brochure featuring a 4-inch hard disk rechargeable screen with exclusive video footage, charging cable, speaker, 36-page insert book, and an MP3 download card for the low, low price of $140.
Well, I know someone who's actually already bought two of them.
Two?
Yep.
I can understand.
And one to keep.
Fair enough. The other one is the other version that you can buy is you can just buy the MP3 files only from Amazon or iTunes. They're the only two places I've found them.
Yep.
If you would like a standard jewel case version, fuck you. You don't get one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they'll probably change that because I remember the one for 10,000 Days had the little goggles on the front that you could like look at all the artwork and everything like that. It was actually really...
Was it like some sort of 3D thing or...?
From memory, yeah. It was like you could look at... You could look through the goggles and you could see both, like the sort of things would kind of move and, you know, be 3D and everything like that. But it was still more of a standard jewel case. I mean, I think it's a bit weird that they're not releasing just like an album, like a standard for $20 or $30 or something like that. But there again, I kind of understand why they're not as well, because who buys albums? It would make more sense to them to release a vinyl version. And the CD and the trifold soft pack, blah, 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 bullshit, everything. But then have the vinyl version for, say, $60 or $70, and it comes with the MP3 files as well. Like, that would be what I would do if I was their size, if I was a band like them, and then just say everyone else can stream it because Spotify.
Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, and they also, like, in the lead up to this, they put all their, the whole back catalog on Spotify.
Yes.
As well. Which he's like, oh, okay, they're obviously gearing up to the launch here if they're going to put the whole back catalogue out there.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Mm. And the thing that was really interesting was Matt Blackshaw actually the other day, was he called me and he said the day they released it, and he said, so how much money do you reckon Tool made off Spotify today? And I said, probably enough for a cup of coffee.
I was about to say a cup of coffee, maybe a pint, you know, exactly. A pint of beer potentially. Yeah.
But a pint of beer, not in Australia, because there's no way that they would afford that.
How much do I reckon? Oh, that's an interesting question. How much do I reckon Tool made off streaming?
I think they probably made, you know, maybe a couple of $100, something like that. But then again, I don't know what their deal is with the streaming. They might on a special deal that they're getting a lot more, etc.
Maybe the other thing is as well, maybe they only agreed to do it is like, okay, we're going to do this, but fuck, you better pay us well for it. You better pay us a decent portion for it.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we're not doing it.
Yeah, we're getting, instead of getting, you know, 0.0007 cents a stream or whatever it is, we're going to get like 20 cents a stream. I'm just saying it could be something like that.
I bet instead of it being like 0.00007, it's like 0.007 or something.
Maybe. Don't know.
Yeah. They must have renegotiated it to get it on there.
Oh, 100%. There's no way.
Because this is the other thing that Anil Prasad has been talking about. Record companies are suspiciously reluctant to do like back catalog releases these days.
Mm.
So maybe they're like, oh, we'd like to do a remastered and re-released version of our back catalog. And the record label went and said, fuck you. No, not happening.
Maybe.
So maybe this was the deal. Who knows?
Maybe.
There's a lot of speculation. Now, you've noticed that I've been suspiciously silent on what I think of the Tool single.
Yep.
I don't particularly like it. However, I've only listened to it once.
That's totally fine. You can go away.
I thought I'd put the caveat on there that I've only listened to it once.
Yeah, so I actually first listened to it with my sound system in my room, which is a surround sound system, and it kind of put things in weird places. But I still enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really cool.
The YouTube link that I sent you, does that even like support 5.1? I just assumed it was all just straight up two-channel stereo.
My sound system in my room will do it automatically, dependent on where panning is.
Okay.
Which was cool, but it was kind of weird because the left guitar was coming out of the left rear speaker and the right guitar was coming out of like the front right. It was really strange, which tells me they've got a really interesting panning thing going on, which tells me it's possibly to do with phasing, which would explain a few things. But anyway, getting technical.
The reason why I ask is because I was listening to it on my phone.
Yeah, right, okay. Mm.
Just straight out of the phone speaker.
So you're missing a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't hear any of them, pretty much none of the panning or anything like that. The other thing as well that my first impression of it was like there are suspiciously few like guitars. They're not really doing a lot of technical things in most of the places. It's just sort of the drums were kind of carrying the song.
Well, that's kind of always been a Tool thing. The drums have always been very forward so far as Tool is concerned, and the guitars have always kind of sat back. There were a couple of songs on 10,000 Days where they were a little bit more forward, but traditionally drums have always kind of been almost the lead instrument, which I think is awesome because
when you've got Danny on the drums, fair enough.
Exactly. Steph has actually just picked up the drums recently. Started learning. There's an electric kit and such sitting in the studio now and everything like that. And I showed her, the new track, and she's just sitting there going, "Nah, fuck this. That's what the fuck?" Like, because what he's doing is, it sounds stupid easy, right?
Do you reckon you could have picked anything harder? I mean, maybe like Bleed by Meshuggah, possibly?
No, I showed her some stuff by Thomas Lang the other day, and she just went, nah. Nah.
Yeah, exactly.
Nah.
Yeah. What you need to do then is need to show her like a Neil Peart drum solo or something. Specifically the part where he's playing 3-4 with his feet and 7-8 with his hands.
Yeah, yeah.
If you really want to discourage a drummer, use that.
I was explaining to her about you know, polyrhythms and everything like that the other day. And I was sitting down in front of the drum kit, and I was sitting up here in the studio, and I was just tapping it out with my hands, and she just looks at me and goes, "I hate you." I've gone, "Why?" And she goes, "Because you just did it." I was like, "No, I don't think I did." She's, "Yeah, you did. As you were talking to me, you were doing it with your hands." I'm like, "Yeah, it's very different if I'm sitting in front of a drum kit, you know." Yeah. So it's and I haven't tried to do it in front of a drum kit because I'm a worthless drummer.
I was going to say, not a drummer.
Exactly. But no, look, I am super keen for this album. I've been waiting 14 years for it, you know. So
you and everybody else in the prog world, frankly.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, to put this in context, we were in high school when the last record came out.
Yes, I was in year 10.
I was in year 12 when it came out.
Yeah.
We're only like 1 year apart, but the way that the school system works is that your high school finished at year 11, mine finishes in year 12.
No. Ours finishes in year 12 as well, but I skipped a year. I went up a year. So
nice.
I started early. I didn't skip a year. I started early. I started when I was 4 instead of when I was 5. So I finished sort of early-ish. I wasn't even 18. I couldn't even legally drink when I finished school.
School finishes in this state at 17, so neither could I. this is, like we live in the same country, and yet we have two wildly different schooling systems. Go work that one out.
Yeah, I know. Wildly different train systems, wildly different transport systems.
Anyway. It's the joke. Getting Australia to agree on anything is impossible. We couldn't even agree on how wide the railway track should be.
Exactly. And if you all think we're kidding about that, we're not. If you cross borders, you have to change trains. So
it's not even a joke.
So dumb.
That's only because a guy in Western Australia thought that he could save money by having a narrow railway gauge. Not thinking about that, of course, that it's still two parallel lines of metal. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
Yeah. But that's the new Tool single. We're hotly anticipating the new Tool record. Well, I am.
I wonder, the only other thing that I had to say about it was I wonder, like, if that's the song that they chose to put out ahead of the record as the single, I wonder what the rest of it's like. Because some bands have a particular track record of putting out the worst fucking song as the single.
Dream Theater. What?
Not just them. I mean... Okay, let's rewind and let's talk about a band that neither of us particularly like, but I had an opportunity to see, at least one of the members of it, Oasis.
Yep.
They had What's the Storming Morning Glory back in 19, whatever it was.
Sorry, that's just my impersonation of Oasis.
Yeah, but the first single off that record was Roll With It, which objectively is the worst fucking song on the record.
Sure.
And that was the first single.
It's kind of like a diamond turd amongst turds, really, but, you know, that's come on. There you go. I've nailed my colours to the mast now. We're going to get angry emails about that. I hate Oasis. I hate them with a passion.
Yeah, okay. I figured you might. Because you're a snob.
Well, I'm a prog snob. What do you want from me?
Yeah. Quick preface to the other show. I actually saw Liam Gallagher play at a music festival in Prague.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have a chat about that. That'll be on the other show.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
However, we have a whole bunch more. It wasn't just Tool that released a record in these last couple of weeks. We have other bands to talk about.
So you left on the 7th of June, right?
Yes.
Okay. So on the 7th of June, there was Alberto Rigoni, Dark Suns, Pelican, Pholus Dactylus, The Resonance Project, Warm Rain, 13 of Everything, Driving Slow Motion, Chon, Cyril, Seven Steps to the Green Door, Istar, Geoda, Mobius, and Francois Brunel.
That was just on June 7.
They were the prog albums that were released on June 7.
Right.
Right.
You're not going to do this for every day I've been away, are you?
Oh, God, no. God, no, because I am looking at, funnily enough, I'm looking right now at August 30. And on August 30, there's Clepsydria, The Gap, Magic Pie, Fragments of the Fifth Element, which we're going to come back to a little bit later, Hesse Fröberg and Musical Companion, Parallel Life.
You
those
poor
are the albums
you
that are coming out.
Fucking bastards.
Exactly.
You
exactly
poor
what
bastards.
I thought. And obviously Tool's Fear Inoculum is all coming out on that day. I reckon they were like, yeah, we're releasing a new album on this date. And then Tool's like, so away. And they're just like, oh, fuck. Why did we do this? Poor bastards doing
it's like,
that.
It's like all those people who released records on September the 11th.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Dream Theater famously did that with Live Scenes from New York and had to pull the
so
album
did,
cover.
So did Yes. Yes, put out their new record, Magnification, on the on September the 11th, 2001 as well.
Mm.
And they were like, ah, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, we can't. Okay, let's not celebrate, but maybe we do, but maybe not.
Well, at least Yes didn't have a copy of, you know, didn't have a picture of the World Trade Center burning on the cover.
That's true. That is.
They didn't have that. That totally unintentionally, by the way. It was like, oh shit.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Yeah. With call the record, get it out. Especially since Dream Theater from New York as well. It's kind of like, oh, dear. Yeah, it's just, it was just a combination of all the bad things.
It was just everything at once that went wrong, you know. It was not particularly good. So since you left, there's been 138 prog albums released.
Oh, good Lord.
A lot of them, interestingly, in the progressive rock and progressive metal genre. So, you know, with a lot of really, really cool stuff. There's been some jazz fusion and such in there as well. But, yeah, quite a lot in progressive rock and progressive metal. But that's been since you left to today, to time
cool.
of recording. So
fresh.
Yeah, exactly. But...
So obviously
right.
we can't. I was going to say we can't talk about all of those, but
no,
what we can
we
talk about, we could talk about some new Chaos Divine songs that were dropped while I was away,
which are fantastic, by the way.
I was that was why that's why I've opened with this one because you've watched them. You've watched them both live.
I have indeed.
So tell me about them both.
They're fantastic. I didn't actually get to see them in full force because the lead singer of Chaos Divine, Dave, was actually Crook. So.
Oh.
Which is sick, by the way, for all those you who don't understand Australian lingo. He was unwell, and his voice was not apparently quite as on point as all the others when I've seen them before. And he did sound like he was struggling a little bit. But the tracks themselves are absolutely fantastic. They're everything that we've come to expect from Chaos Divine. How Dave goes from those notes where he feels like it's almost like the notes are going to jump out of his chest to then down to that growl in like a second is unbelievable. He just is a monster.
I don't know how the hell he does it either. It's
he's
insane.
A monster.
Yep.
But these tracks are available, aren't they? You can check them both out on Bandcamp, I think.
Absolutely. Both of them. Now, this is in anticipation of a forthcoming new studio album, which, as at time of recording, has not been announced and has not been released yet. Apparently, there's some hold up with the mixing or something. Last time I spoke to Simon, that's what he was telling me.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but doesn't
of
surprise
the two,
me.
False Flags is the one that I enjoy the most. Unspoken is also really cool, but False Flags is the one that I particularly enjoy.
Yeah, I prefer False Flags. Not saying that Unspoken is a bad track or anything because it's not. It's a brilliant track, but of the two, if you, it's kind of like, you know, what do you want, the apple or the orange? Give me the apple any day of the week.
Yeah.
Provided it's a green apple. If it's a red apple, it can fuck off.
I'm the opposite.
Oh, you're a red apple fan, are you?
Yes.
Yeah, no, they're too sweet for me. I like the sour of the other.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so, I mean, they're both great tracks. I highly recommend going and checking that out. One thing I do want to mention as well is one thing I did want to mention as well, Sydney-based band Code Atlantic. They are hitting the studio, I believe it's next month or the month after, to record a new single, or maybe it's a couple of singles, with the anticipation to release it early next year. I know for a fact that they're also trying to get some decent supports, and they've got a couple of gigs coming up with Pavilion. They're from Brisbane. Here in Sydney, Crowbar and a couple others, and I think they might be joining them for the tour, for more tour dates down the line as well. I know we've had them on the show before. We did a whole episode with Matt from Code Atlantic, who's a lovely guy, by the way. So yeah, they just thought I'd give people the knowledge of that. It's not just the five tracks that are on their EP. They've got more stuff coming out, and I know they're working really hard to get to some other areas of Australia and such that they haven't played. So
fantastic.
That's always good to hear bands progressing, particularly in Sydney.
Absolutely. And if you to be honest, if you enjoy the music of Chaos Divine, you should check out Code Atlantic.
I think
if you enjoy Chaos Divine, you probably enjoy Code Atlantic as well. So you should get onto that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And if you enjoy both of those, you will probably enjoy the new record from Hemina.
Absolutely.
Now, we saw Hemina play at Progfest, and Doug Skeen is also the guitar player from Anubis, another previous guest on this show. Mm-hmm. They today have released their new album, Night Echoes, which I've had an opportunity to listen to, and full disclosure, we have an interview lined up later on with Doug. Not in this show because I haven't recorded it yet, but that will be coming out in the future. So get an opportunity to chat with Doug about that. This record is fantastic. If you enjoy Chaos Divine, Code Atlantic, any of the other sort of big progressive metal band, I hear a little bit of Tesseract in them as well.
Yes.
I know Doug's a big fan of the Mars Volta. So if you enjoy any of those bands, go and check out this record because they are fantastic.
Absolutely. Also, new single that's been released by a friend of the show, Joss Batten, released his, he's a blues rock guy, which was really, really interesting. I actually caught up with him for a big interview, which will be the focus of a show probably in a couple of weeks' time. And yeah, he's got a new track out as well. It's called Hollywood Blues, and it's absolutely fantastic. If you're a fan of Joe Bonamassa or any of that kind of stuff, definitely go and check that out. I know it's not quite prog, but it is absolutely brilliant. It's a fantastic episode, fantastic song. So go and check that out.
Yeah, he's a really, really talented musician, and people really should listen to all of his stuff. I've got one of his albums. I haven't bought the new single yet, because unsurprisingly, you know, importing someone into this country is rather expensive.
Absolutely.
Yes. So, but I do have another one of his records, which is called Searching for Answers.
Yep.
Which is a really, really cool, again, if you like all that kind of blues rock stuff, he's a terrific guitar player and
he's got a
fantastic voice as well.
He's got a brilliant voice, yeah.
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 So check that record out. We'll put a link in the show notes to where you can purchase it.
Absolutely. And he's got a show coming up too in Melbourne, his hometown of Melbourne. So,
He plays quite regularly, actually. Sometimes with electric guitar in a band. Sometimes it's just him and his acoustic guitar.
Absolutely.
So check that out.
Definitely check that out. We'll put some links in the show notes for you guys to follow. Now, you've got something on here as well. You've got a new Hashashin record as well is due out on September 27.
Yes. The new Hashashin record, which is called, now you're going to make me say it, Production. It'll be out on September the 27th. There is the lead single, which is called Crossing the Pange, which is available on Bandcamp. It's a really, really cool song. You'll need to listen to it immediately.
Absolutely.
Really, really cool. This particular song, there isn't any of the weird stringed instrumentation, the traditional Arabic and Indian stringed instrumentation that the band usually uses. This is much more of a straight-ahead kind of guitar, prog, metal kind of sound. So I think it's a good place to start with that band if you're looking for a way into that kind of music. Still using the same similar sort of Indian and Arabic scales and the sort of chords and that sort of thing that that Lachlan uses. So go and check that out.
Famous for, I suppose.
Yes. So go and check that out. That record will be out September 27.
Awesome.
And we were talking earlier about tours. You all know who else is coming to who else is out touring.
Oh,
Plenty.
Damn right I do.
Plenty is touring. Now, unfortunately, because this tour was announced while I was away, most of the shows are actually now sold out.
They are.
Which is great for him, bad for me, because he's not coming to Perth.
Well, yeah, I was going
to
say.
This doesn't surprise me at all. People get really shitty at bands who don't come to Perth. I totally understand why, so please don't interpret this as me getting all shitty on it, because I know exactly why they're not coming.
Exactly. So it's
we have the shows that are still exactly the shows that still have tickets available. We have October the 10th at Brisbane at the Foundry. There is a show in Sydney that still has tickets available at the Lansdowne October the 13th.
So he's doing two nights in Sydney, Saturday and Sunday.
Is he playing at the Lansdowne the Saturday night as well?
I believe so.
Excellent. And so there are still tickets available for a show in Auckland. He's actually sold out a show in. He's sold out the second show in Auckland. He sold a show in Auckland, a show in Wellington, and a show in Christchurch.
Yep. It's awesome. He's actually touring with some pretty damn good acts too. In Australia, he's touring with Nick Johnson, Jacob Zaghetti, and Dave Mackay. And in New Zealand, he's playing with Heavy Metal Ninjas and Nick Johnson as well. And yeah, the two, as you mentioned, there are two, Auckland and Wellington, both sold out in New Zealand. And can we just talk about just for a second? I've just pulled up the tour dates here. In New Zealand, in Auckland, the first night in Auckland is a Wednesday night, October 16th, and he's playing at Whammy Bar. That's a great name for a venue.
It just sort of twigged him. I'm like, oh yeah, that is kind of cool for a rock club called Whammy Bar.
It's really, really good.
Maybe we need one. Maybe we need like a sister club somewhere else called the Wah Pedal or something.
Absolutely.
Tremolo Bar, perhaps.
But no, that looks like a really, really good good gig. If you go into the Sydney show on the Sunday night, I'll see you there. I'm going along to that one because Pliny, and that's going to be hella awesome.
Yeah.
Now onto something slightly more morbid. Francesca Sudson, you've got in here.
Yes.
I don't know who Francesca Sudson is. Should I know who Francesca Sudson is?
Yes, you should. You absolutely should. You know the King Crimson cover for most of the records that they have put out in the last couple of years?
Yeah.
She is the artist that designed all of those covers. She's the artist that designed all of their t-shirts, all of the promotional material that you would have seen King Crimson put out. She's the artist responsible for them, and unfortunately, sadly, she lost a very long and painful battle with lymphoma a couple of days ago, leaving behind her husband and her two cats. So rest in peace, Francesca. You are an amazing artist.
Yeah, absolutely. It's never good when artists go, unfortunately.
No, not at all.
Well, when anyone goes, not just artists, but it's always pretty upsetting.
Yes.
Although, interested to see what King Crimson does for their next venture with who the next artist they choose will be. So, rest in peace. Definitely.
The likelihood of them actually releasing a new studio album is almost nil.
Yep.
I don't think that'll ever happen because, well, they play new songs in live in concert all the time and they get to experiment the shit out of them. So why would they?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Moving on, Lockout Laws in Sydney. Very briefly, we won't derail the whole podcast with it this time. I promise. There's an inquiry happening at the moment. If you've been following it, you know what's going on. Long story short, there's a big inquiry going into it, and there were some really interesting statistics pulled out the other day. Since the introduction of the Lockout Laws, 500,000 people have avoided Sydney per year.
I'd love to know how they came up with those numbers.
I think they based it on the previous years and trends and so on and so forth, and they noticed that basically as soon as the lockout laws got into full swing, the actual tourism has dropped off quite dramatically.
Damn.
So I think that's how they've come to figure that out.
I'm interested in it because I know Gladys Berejiklian has been like, oh, she's basically said fake news to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which... Just to jump to the end here. That's how I basically see this inquiry panning out. They're going to release a report. Berejiklian's going to say fake news and do nothing.
Well, I would suggest so as well. That's probably what's going to wind up happening, especially considering the nurses' union released their report. The New South Wales Nurses and Midwives Association have said that it's eradicated. Alcohol-related assault deaths at St. Vincent's Hospital, and there has
And there it is. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. They've already saved $500,000 at St. Vincent's Hospital alone due to a reduction in ambulance and medical costs linked to fewer surgeries for fractures. That's what they have said. So they're going to save $500,000 since the introduction of this entire thing at one hospital. Let's say that RPA has done the same. It wouldn't have, but let's say it has. That's $1 million since the introduction of these lockout laws in 2014, but they've cost the economy $16 billion. But we don't worry about that.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Cool, they've saved themselves a couple of million over 5 years, but how much money have they pissed away in tourism revenue, sales tax, secondary income for hotels, restaurants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, when you've
got the answer to that question is billions.
When you've got the boss of the Ivy... coming out and saying that the Ivy is, by the way, the biggest nightclub in Sydney. and it's soon to close.
Holy shit.
When this guy comes out and says, yeah, our revenue's dropped by 56%.
Holy shit.
That's the other thing massive.
When you've got Alan Jones, I mean, Alan Jones, for fuck's sake, coming out in favor of repealing lockout laws, you know you're on the wrong side of history when he is the one saying that maybe we should get rid of this thing.
Well, that and also the Young Liberals.
Really?
The young liberals.
Oh, good Lord.
The Young Liberals New South Wales have a thing on their website. It's a petition to wind back the lockout laws. It states, the lockout laws in New South Wales are stifling free enterprise and affecting the nighttime economy. Now, we are calling on the Berejiklian government to wind back the lockout laws, including allowing revenues with a strong safety record to opt out of restrictive regulations, allowing neat spirits to be served after midnight, and addressing misbehaviour where it occurs rather than the current broad brush approach that presumes guilt.
Yeah, like I said, you know, so you're on the wrong. Well, members of her own party, you know, we all know how factional politics can be and you've got to balance all that.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, the overriding thing is when you've got, you know, it's eradicated. Like when it's a public health and safety measure, you could, they could lose $100 billion and they'll still say, oh, no, but it's worth it when people don't die. That's the problem.
100%.
There it is right there. They could be losing money hand over fist. Problem. And like I said, the report will come out. Berejiklian will just say fake news and move on.
Yeah, exactly.
And the whole thing will just be pissed up against the wall and the lockout laws will continue on.
Oh, 100%. And meanwhile, our entire industry is going to die.
It's already dead.
It's pretty
much dead now.
Already fucked anyway, so there's not much point in even worrying about it anymore. But, you know, as I mentioned in the Dead of Winter Festival episode, both Steph and I were absolutely blown away by how how different it is up in Brisbane. You know, you walk out. We walked out of this gig and went down into the valley, which is all a protected live music area, and the place was crawling. It was absolutely jam packed with people. Live bands playing everywhere. Meanwhile, in Sydney, we've got buskers who are being told that they're making too much noise on a Friday night at 7:30.
Oh, for goodness sake. Buskers, so, what? Guys guys with an acoustic guitar, not tuned, playing Wonderwall badly are being told to stop.
Well, I mean,
that's
probably
my experience.
Tell them that
that's
as
my
well,
experience
but,
of
know,
buskers in Australia.
Yeah, but you're exactly right. These are guys who are busking on the street at 7:30 at night and they were shut down by council rangers.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yep. So,
that's a fucking joke. Yeah.
Moving on.
Yes.
The one last piece of news, I suppose, is just sort of somewhat of a follow-up. But I mentioned a couple of episodes ago that I was going to go and see the movie Yesterday, which is all about the Beatles and the music and blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but my rating of that movie is probably 4.5 out of 5. Go and see it.
Cool.
It's brilliant.
I haven't seen it yet.
Really good. I'm not going to spoil anything for you. Just, it's great. Go and see it. Take her, Christina. Is your missus here?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, good. Take her. Go and see it. It's fucking awesome.
When I eventually get around to seeing it, I will report back with what I thought of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now,
I think we've kept the good people waiting long enough.
Absolutely.
So, last month, while Stream Theatre were on tour in Europe, I had the fantastic opportunity to be able to sit down and do an interview with James LeBrie. As we mentioned at the top of the show, big thanks to Dream Theater's management for setting that one up. Big thanks to Rick Fulner for agreeing to do it. And big thanks to Jake Sullivan for patching the call through.
Absolutely.
So I had to ring America. America rang Greece and then they patched the call through.
Absolutely. And can we just say that that's absolutely fantastic that they did it?
Yes, absolutely.
That's brilliant. Here in Australia, if I'm in Australia, I get free international calls to the US, so I can, and the UK and a few other places, so I can generally just call in. It's not really ever an issue. I don't have time limits or things like that. Mm. But where you were, being that you were in Bulgaria.
Yeah. I was in Bulgaria, and also I don't set my phone up for international roaming when I go overseas.
No, because
well, because the problem is to pay for it while I'm in Bulgaria is astronomical. It's something like $15 a day or something.
Yeah, screw that.
So it was insane. So I didn't bother. The magic wonders of Skype and all that sort of thing helped us out with that one.
Absolutely.
So here is my interview with James LeBrie.
Thank you. review.
Welcome, James Labrie, to the 9-8 podcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So, how has your European tour been going? What's been the reaction to the new song so far?
Yeah, the reaction, even when we were doing North America, has been amazing. I mean, I guess it feeds off of the fact that the album was well-received worldwide, and, you know, it was kind of a resurgence of enthusiasm and excitement amongst the fans. And so we're seeing that every night, you know, and while we're over here, you know, going throughout Europe, we're seeing the exact same reaction. It's very positive. It's, you know, it's not like what a lot of bands talk about. When you play the newer material, you can tell a lot of people aren't, you know, they don't know it yet, or they're waiting for the old classics. We're kind of getting the opposite, you know, they're really stoked and, you know, hands in the air and really thoroughly engaged.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. I was wondering if you could walk us through a brief description of what you do before, during, and after a show to keep your voice the ultimate powerhouse that it is.
Well, there's a lot going on. Okay, so I'll give you an example of today. So woke up. I did my Immunitech. It's like a whey protein. So I do 3 packs of that with orange juice. And then I go on a workout. So I do a 30-minute run on the treadmill. And then I do a bunch of stretching, push-ups, and sit-ups to follow that. And then I come back, I eat a banana. I come back to my room, eat a banana, an orange, take vitamins. The vitamins are calcium, magnesium, glucosamine, B12, zinc, and milk thistle. And then I hop in the shower, take a shower. Then I do a little vocal warm-up, and I use this thing called the Dr. Vox, and it was introduced to me by Jamie Vandera, who I went back to studying with back in September and that. And it's this thing, it has a little bit of water in it. It's like a tube with a straw, and you, as you hum and that, it blows bubbles. And what it does is it massages the vocal cords. And so I do, you know, about a 20-minute little, like just, you know, light warm up with that. And then I go and I have a bite to eat. I usually try and keep it high proteins. So kind of, you know, like chicken or beef or lamb, a lot of vegetables. I eat a lot of fruit throughout the day, and I drink copious amounts of water, which is, you know, essential for a singer. And then when I get to the gig, I do about 2 hours before, I do another little vocalese. And then I do this thing with a mask, which is like light falsetto into full voice, about an hour before for about 20 minutes. Then I rest. Then I get dressed. Then I do some more stretching, a little jumping jacks here and there, and then kind of just open up the voice even more to like it's full. And then I go on stage and kick it. And then after the show, I wait about an hour to 2 hours, and then I do a little cool down vocally. And that's just like bringing your voice from a singing position back into a speaking position, which is essential to keep your voice from getting vocal fatigue. Because if you leave it in the singing position, it can suffer from it kind of almost like a shock to the system, and then it doesn't relax in your you know, it's just not good. It's just not good for you. So that's basically what my day is, each and every day. And then, you know, of course, if I'm not feeling well and I'm sick and stuff like that, then, I mean, I still do all of that, but I know that I'm going to be vocally compromised to a certain degree. I don't really know, you know, I do all that to ensure that I can be at my optimum or whatever my body will give me, whatever my instrument will give me, but I do know that I'm going to have to, you know, maybe kick back a few gears.
It's very, very interesting to hear you go through. It was quite an involved process. What does change if you are sick? Do you tend to lose some of the high stuff, or is it more of the low notes that you'd lose when you're sick?
Absolutely.
Or is it sort of a...
No. The low notes are always there, you know, and I think any singer would tell you that. But, you know, it's funny these days. I have a lot of singers coming up to me, like especially when we're out here on a festival tour, and when we have opening acts, you know, even when we're doing our evenings with, or not evenings with, but when we're doing a headline show, you know, and they'll come up and they'll go, "Hey man, what do? You know, I'm not feeling well. I got no voice." And I'll tell them, "This is what I would do if I were you, you know, and at least you're going to be, you know, giving it a bit more than it would normally have if you just went out there cold turkey and tried to make it work, you know. So, and there, you know, and a lot of singers nowadays too, they're dealing with the social aspects of the internet, you know, where everybody gets ripped up, everybody gets criticized, and they're going like, how do you deal with that? You know, I go, you know what, you're always going to have somebody that doesn't like what you do. You're always going to have somebody that thinks that, you know, they're better or whatever. I said, you know, singers have to be, they have to have skin as thick as alligators, and you have to be, you can't take it to heart, you know. And I've toured with everyone, Dream Theater over the years, you know, the biggest bands. And I've had the same conversations with those singers. I'm not going to say the names, but everybody can kind of put that together, and they deal with the same shit, you know, and it's kind of, you know, you're at the mercy of your instrument. It's an organic instrument, and you have to be able to accept what's going on and take it with a grain of salt, because you know if you had a great show, you know if you didn't. You don't need anybody else to tell you that, you know. And the thing is that the way I look at it is that 9 times out of 10 I'm having a great show. If I don't, hey, whatever, I'm a human being, so that's good.
Yeah, it's the social media aspect, especially in the position that I am as the Dream Theater fan club director. I see so many people say so many quite negative and quite critical things about musicians, and I, as a fan, get really, really upset and irritated by that. And however you guys put up with it is unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, they feel that they, you know, and they have a vehicle, they have a platform where they can be heard. And that's the worst thing, is that, you know, normally somebody like that would never be heard, and who would care? But now you have people that just want to support that, to say, hey, yeah, you know, like, hey, I'm with you, man, whatever, you know. Like, it's a very weird dichotomy that's going on socially, and it's a community that I would like to think that there's a hell of a lot more positivity than negativity, but unfortunately you're going to have, as we refer to them, the trolls. So they're always going to exist, and who cares? You know, really, at the end of the day, you know. And that's the other thing I say to these singers, and they say, you know, they struggle with it, but, you know, being a singer too is the psychological aspects. You can never lose faith in yourself, because then you're in a whole other realm of turmoil. And, you know, so you can't let any of these words resonate with you, or else you will become that very thing.
So who is one artist that you've seen or heard about that you think more people should know about, in projects you've worked with, in bands that you've opened with, or
an author, did you say?
No, artist, a musician.
Oh, artist. I thought you said author. Okay. Well, the author is Jonathan L. Howard. I would think Car Park North.
Okay.
I really like them.
Mm-hmm.
Animals and Me. I really love them. I would say, and I know it's bias, but I love my son's band, Falsett, and they just put together a whole new album, and so that is being mixed right now from Nolly, who's the bass player with Periphery. And and so, but there's, you know, Architect, I like those guys. I would say Switchfoot. I love Switchfoot. Yeah, that's all that's coming to mind right now.
Oh, that's good. That's a great list there. We'll put some links in the show notes for the podcast.
Yeah, you should definitely put a link to In Flames' new album, too, Mask. It's a great album. Great album. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they've done a few shows with us over here while we've been here, too. They're great guys, really cool guys. Yeah, cool.
All right. So I read in an interview from many years ago where you said Scarred and Octavarium were your favorite Dream Theater songs to sing. Is that still the case? Are there others that would go on that list now?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's always changing, correct? I mean, you know, depending on where you are at that, you know, that's where I was at that particular moment in time. Now, where I am now, favorite songs to sing are probably Untethered Angel, Barstool Warrior. I Can't Wait Until We Bust Out at Wit's End from the new album. That's a great track. Aside from that, I love singing In the Presence of Enemies Part 1. I love doing Lie Again from the Awake album. It feels great. I love doing... Pale Blue Dot by with a new album. So a lot of the new material is very, very dear to me right now. So that's kind of where my headspace is. You know, if I was to go back and say a song that I would love to sing again that we haven't touched upon in an extremely long time would be Disappear. Just because it's a very moving song, both musically and especially lyrically. You know, to do something like that, I think right in the middle of a show would be very dynamic. It would really, I think, be a powerful moment within the evening.
I know for fans of progressive music, when they say, oh, Dream Theater haven't got any soul or any of that sort of, you know, noise, rubbish comments, I always point them to Disappear as a song to say, play, you know, listen to that one and then tell me that this band doesn't have any soul.
Right. You know, I mean, hey, you know what? You want to go on that one? Let's just listen to John Petrucci's solo at the beginning of Barstool Warrior. I rest
absolutely
my case. I'm done. You know,
yep.
I mean, it's the most gorgeous, beautiful, hauntingly powerful. And I told him, I said, John, that's one of the most beautiful freaking, you know, melodies that you've ever created. It's so, and he's like, oh, man, thanks a lot, man. I mean, you know, that whole thing, you know, if you think about it, As I Am, the song As I Am, well, those lyrics are about that. Like people going, hey, man, you know, you know, you guys got no soul. And it's also about, like, you know, being where you are and recognizing where you are and having that perspective, you know, and that other people misinterpret it. And so it deals with a lot of misinterpretation, you know. And so it's really funny, too, because I've heard that over the years. You know, well, you know, yeah, they're all technical, you know. They're all about, like, you know, the progressiveness. And I'm like, holy shit. Okay. Well, you totally missed it. You know, I don't know how much you've heard, but you haven't heard enough to make that kind of a comment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what is the most difficult Dream Theater song for you to sing technically? I imagine it's something like Only a Matter of Time. What are a lot of words crammed into a verse there from the early days.
No, you know what? No, no. Like those songs, those songs are not technically challenging. You know, believe it or not, if you listen to Fall Into the Light from the new album, the timing on that, even though, like, you know, on the surface it kind of, like, it drives, right? It just, like, it seems to just, like a locomotive, it just moves forward, it's flying down the track. But if you listen to the intervals of when I come in and out, if you were to actually, you know, take my voice off and then sing it to the timing that I sing, you would realize it's very syncopated. And that took me a bit to really wrap my head around. I remember even going into the studio and singing it, and I didn't really think much of it, you know, going in there. I was like, yeah, you know, whatever, you know, another Dream Theater time signature, whippy-doo. But when I got behind the microphone and then I started to sing, and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I kept coming in either just a sliver early or just a little moment late. And I was like, oh, my God, hang on a second. I got to count this out, you know. So it's kind of it's really strange. It's the kind of songs that, you know, when you're playing them and you're just driving down the road, you're thinking nothing of it. Oh, yeah, man. You know, written on the water. Like, it sounds like I'm just coming in on four, you know. Memories dissipate. But all of those, I'm telling you right now, and I think you're coming to the show tomorrow night. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So when you hear that, if you tap your foot when I'm coming into that song, just do me a favor and do that, and you're going to go, ooh, oh, shit, I see what he's talking about. It's really wild, you know, crazy. Learning to Live is another one that's like that. It's very, very odd time signature where I'm coming in and out, in and out. So there's several songs like that, you know, in our discography. But, actually, you know, any of the songs there was The Ones Who Helped to Set the Sun. That was a little weird at first, too, singing that one from the first album. But But it's all, you know. Thank God that I played drums from the time I was 5 till I was 17, because that really gave me that rhythmic, you know, insight into, especially coming into a band like like Dream Theater. It really enabled me to be able to like naturally just feel it instead of being mechanical, you know, and clinical.
That's a really interesting insight there. Thank you for that, James. Which Dream Theater song do you feel is the most underrated by the fans?
Holy shit. I think that, you know, a lot of people, there's two. There's I Walk Beside You. I think that was a beautiful, you know, just real straightforward rock track. And I think it's a beautiful song. And I think that a lot of people, you know, when it initially came out, just thought, well, you know, it sounds a lot like U2, you know, it's all like that stuff. Well, hey, you know, we love U2. Thank you. Thank you. That's a compliment, you know. I think another song that it did get the love, but it did get not as much as we had thought was Blind Faith. You know, that's another song. I think it's a freaking great song. Solitary Shell, I think, is a beautiful song that didn't necessarily translate as powerfully as we would have thought, you know, and connect as strongly as we thought. I think there's several out there, but those three initially come to mind.
Yeah, I think the influence of U2 on Dream Theater is quite underplayed. Everybody talks about the influence of the big prog bands in Rush and Yes and that sort of thing. But even going back to the early days, I mean, even like To Live Forever, that was very much a, you know, the U2 influence. And I think that it's very much downplayed by a lot of people, the influence of U2.
I don't know. I don't understand why that is. It's like, oh, well, wait a minute, you're a progressive metal band. You can't be associated with anything that's in the realm of pop. And it's like, why? If there's a band that is considered a pop band and they do their music is done with justice and full integrity and it's beautiful, then who gives a shit if it's pop? You know, One Republic. I love One Republic. You know, people go, woo-woo, you know, sure, some people are going to go, woo, I didn't know you'd be in One Republic. Why not? They write great tunes. You know, Ryan Tedder is freaking brilliant. You know, he's got a beautiful voice. He knows how to write. The whole band is. The whole band needs to be given credit because they have an incredible sound. You know, so like Coldplay. I think fucking Coldplay is brilliant. You know, so if a band is considered a pop band and they do their stuff justice, great. 1975. I love those guys. You know, even though I know the singer is not into progressive rock. He kind of shut it down. Like, he just like, oh, I can't stand all this superfluous playing. I was really disappointed to hear him say that. I think his name's Matt or something like that. And I was like, dude, you know, the last thing you do is, like, you don't put down another, you know, style of music or genre of music. If you don't like it, then, you know, keep it to yourself, you know? You don't have to start advertising it. And I was very disappointed in that because I do like their music, but I'm not so sure I'm keen on the individual at this particular moment. Maybe when he grows up, he'll have something else to say. But, you know, I don't know, you know, it was just a very callous remark, you know, towards the whole progressive movement. And,
fair enough.
I was extremely disappointed, but, you know. But anyways, yeah, so, you know, I like to take in, like, my father, you know, he introduced me to, you know, to Miles Davis at such a tender age, you know, and I remember just loving jazz and growing, and I still love jazz today. And you know, he was, and at the same time, he'd hear the albums that I was listening to, you know, growing up listening to Rush and growing up listening to Yes and Pink Floyd. And he would go, you know, I can see why you're liking this. This is very cool. And it does have a classical and jazz type influence. It's very eclectic, of course, you know, and that's what makes it so beautiful. And so, you know, to me, I think it's you're in a much more better situation to be open-minded. And it doesn't matter what the stigmatism is around that kind of music or that particular band. Did you like that song? That's all that really matters, you know? Did it click with you? Were you engaged with it? That's it. That's what it comes down to. Who gives a shit what anybody else thinks? Don't be influenced by someone else's tastes. It's what matters is what you like. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. It goes back to that old, you know, cliche of there's only two kinds of music. There's good music and there's bad music.
Exactly.
And all the other labels sort of melt away at the end of the day.
Sure they do. Absolutely.
So before we get to questions from our Dream Theater fan club, I can say that the question I get asked the most by a mile is, when are you touring Australia? Mm. And then I see fans all the time on Twitter and Facebook being quite critical of the band when they don't. Obviously, you can't play everywhere or else you'd go bust. But what do you think fans of Dream Theater could do to get you to come and play in their country instead of just sounding off on social media?
It's a business, right? You know, and at the end of the day, it comes down to the promoters within those territories working with our agency, you know, our booking agency. And, you know, we've already had those talks with our agent, our agents about doing a more extensive tour in Australia and definitely doing at least one date in New Zealand. It's been a while since it's been far too long since we've done a full-out tour in Australia, like hitting Perth and Melbourne, Adelaide, Brisbane. You know, it needs to happen. And so those talks have already been had. As to what will materialize from that, it's still a little premature to say. But I would think that I'm keeping my fingers crossed that everything will be much better than it has been recently. And we can finally, you know, do a proper tour for our Australian fans and New Zealand as well. You know, we've only gone there once, and I think that was, 12 years ago at least or something like that? That's ridiculous. So, from my lips to God's ears, I hope that it works.
I hope so too. I mean, at least from the conversations that I've had with promoters in Australia, they tell me, they say, oh, well, we have to wait until the band have a tour in Asia booked, and then we can... You know, then it makes a bit more sense for them financially to do shows like that.
Correct, and that is the truth. I mean, you know, we have to be in that region in order for it to, you know, to make sense logistically, right? You know, and that's always the parameters that are set forth on any world tour. You know, it's a big machine to you know, float around the world. And those things always have to be considered. So yes, it makes perfect sense. And what those promoters are saying is absolutely true, that, you know, for us to be in Asia and then to go to Australia is simple. For us to be in South America and then flip over to Australia, that's ridiculous. So it does have to, it's all about timing for sure.
I'll ask the one question that was asked the most by the fan club members, and this comes from Dylan Proctor. Have you ever thought of doing or making The Astonishing into a full-blown musical stage show, sort of like a Broadway West End-style show?
Yeah, I mean...
They say it's already got most of the elements of a
musical. Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, that was pretty much a given when, you know, when the whole thing was put together, and even... you know, before we even had the master in hands. I mean, it would be beautiful. I think it would just be, it makes perfect sense. All the elements are there for, I think, a sensational theatrical, you know, unveiling of that story, of that, and the music you know, the vocals and all that, to hear that on Broadway, I think it would be amazing. I think it would go down. We keep talking about that there will be a time. I guess it just you know, the moment hasn't arrived yet. But definitely, I do see that maybe I see a strong possibility of that coming to fruition for sure.
Fantastic. Well, stay tuned for that.
Yeah,
James LeBrie, thank you very much for appearing on the 9-8 podcast.
Thank you so much. Great being here, and we look forward to seeing everyone. At some point, rather sooner than later.
The 9-8 interview.
Now, I do have an apology to make on the back of that. I know we put a call out on the Dream Theater Fan Club Facebook page for questions. James was very good with his time, but unfortunately, by the time I got to the end, I only had time to ask one question. He had to go. He had to be at sound check in Greece, so we had to wrap that interview up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I only had a chance to get to ask one of the questions.
Mm.
I hope that the Astonishing Broadway show, or probably won't be on Broadway, probably off Broadway somewhere, but I hope that musical show does actually happen.
Yeah, me too.
I would actually like to see that.
So would I, actually. I think it would be absolutely fantastic to see something like that. And can I just say for a second how, I mean, okay, you expect him to be a professional, you know, but how unbelievably humble he was in talking to you. Hear a lot of stories about James LeBrie being a bit of a dick and, you know, all this sort of stuff, but he didn't come across that like that at all. Not to me anyway.
No, not at all. No, he's very, very polite, very gracious with his time. He, you know, we had half an hour. I think we ended up on the phone for about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's very gracious. Now, there is one part of that I wanted to call out from the interview, and I'll do that here. He did mention at the show about Fall Into the Light. Mm. He totally does come in on an odd beat. I think the riff, I'm no musician, but you know, I can count. Pretty sure the riff is in 10-8, and he comes in on the 3. So he mentioned during the interview there where he had to, you know, when he was recording the vocals for the song, he kind of had to sit down and count it out. Mm-hmm. That's why he's coming in on the 3 in a riff that's 10-8. It's quite odd. It's quite an odd place for the vocals to be put in. What do you think about that, Dave?
Well, there's 21 beats from the time that the riff starts. So assuming he's coming in on the 3, then that would make it 18, which would mean it would be 9-8, and then he comes in on the 3.
Oh, son of a bitch. How did I not say 9-8?
So I think I could be wrong, but I
thought it was 10. But I thought it was 10 because I know it changes halfway through. The riff at the start is like what da 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 da.
Well, that's 4-4. That's straight up 4-4.
Is that?
Yeah.
I thought because the extra bit of
da 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 da. You know.
Okay, so that starts in 4 and then goes to 9-8. Is that how that works? Okay, we can do that whole.
I'm looking at it now. It's in 5-4.
It's in 5-4.
Apparently, according to... Oh,
so, okay, so I was close. I said it was in 10-8.
Which is 5-4. Yeah, well, yeah. It's not really, but same sort of shit.
Like I said, I'm no musician, but I can count. I counted to 10, and I thought, okay, it must be in 10-8 then. But maybe I was just double counting stuff or whatever.
Well, it could also be that this tab's incorrect. I don't know. I was going to say,
it is tabs. Yeah. So, James didn't know what time. James didn't know what time it was in either. He just had to sort of sit there and count it out.
Well, it's good. I think it shows...
Now, I was going to say, it's not necessarily a slight against him as well. I know plenty of musicians who never bothered to figure out what song a time is in. Neil Peart is a classic example of that. He never bothers to figure out what the timing of it is.
They just play it.
He just plays it, and then he'll figure out, oh, okay, an extra beat needs to go here, or I need to drop a beat, or whatever.
Absolutely.
I think that's a slightly more interesting way of orchestrating a drum part rather than trying to sit down, okay, that's in 6, and then this part's in 7, and then that. Obviously something like Dance of Eternity, you couldn't possibly play that without figuring out what the hell time signature is going on.
Oh, absolutely. You'd have to have an understanding of what's going on there with that. But
and when you watch that documentary as well with the drummers, you can tell that they've got charts there, and it's like, okay, the okay, it's there, and then it's here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, you can't just play along with that song.
No,
and
no,
not,
absolutely
not have an understanding of what the times are.
I actually gave it a go on the drums the other night, and it was terrible. It was so bad.
One day when we set up a Patreon, if the show becomes really big enough to do it, one day we set up a Patreon, we need to put that. You need to have a recording of that. We need to put that on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's
so you're pretty you're, okay. So we'll bring this back around again. So you're pretty sure the riff is in 5-4.
I think so. Yeah,
it's 5-4.
I'm not pretty sure. I've just looked it up, and I think it's in 5-4.
Okay,
from what I read, but I mean, it could also be because it'd be 9-8. I mean, you know, just from I'm basing that on him coming in on the three. If he's coming in on the 1, then yeah, it's 5-4 because it was 21 beats or whatever I said.
Yeah, 21 beats.
21 beats, which mean he would come in on the 1.
Yeah. The only reason I'm basing that on that he's coming in on the 3 is because during the interview he said that he comes in on an odd beat. It's not on the one. So it must be something else.
That's interesting.
And when I was listening to it when he played it live, it sounded like to me that he was coming in on the 3. Because when he said he heard the riff, and when he started to sing the song, it was like it sounded just completely fucked up. And then he was like, oh, okay, I'm going to have to count this out and try and work out where the vocals are supposed to come in. You're going to have to edit this section
so
much.
If he's coming in, if it's a 5-4, then he's coming in on the one.
Okay.
But given that he's saying that he's coming in on an odd beat, that tells me that that's in something else.
Maybe it is 10-8 then, or 9-8 or something.
That's what I'm saying. If it's 9-8, then it could be that he comes in on the 3. But
man, I wish it was 9-8.
I don't know, mate.
Just for my own personal amusement, I wish it was not. I hope the riff is in 9-8.
Yeah, me too. You know what we should do? If the guys or the Dream Theater management or anyone are actually listening, and the guys could shed some light on that, because I mean, I'm counting 5-4. I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
We could just throw this out to the listeners everywhere. Mm. People of the internet, if you would like to weigh in on this debate and tell us what you think that riff is in, please let me know. Please let us know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I'd like to know as well. He just said that he was coming in on an odd beat. And like I said, I'm no musician, but it sounds like to me he's coming in on the 3.
Could be. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. As I said, if it's 5-4, he's coming in on the 1. But, you know, because of the way they're playing and such all over
and
the top of each other.
And if anyone can conclusively prove to us that it is really in 9-8, that would be awesome.
Absolutely.
The reason why I named this show the 9-8 podcast ostensibly was because of Voices by Dream Theater. That is in 9-8.
Yep.
Because I've watched a video of Mike Portnoy playing it out with his, you know, his drum video that he did back in the 90s. So I know that one really is in 9-8.
Awesome.
But it counts differently because it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 1. Then off from there. And then the China is playing 9-4 and
Of course. It's typical. Yeah, typical. It's Mike Portnoy, Rototoms.
Very Mike Portnoy, China on the 9-4, so it's on the downbeat, and then when it comes around, it's on the upbeat. Yeah.
It's unreal. Unreal.
So speaking of live performances, there was one other small little topic I wanted to mention.
Sure.
I went to see a band called Watercolor Ghosts.
Right.
Now, they're a local Perth band. The drummer of Watercolor Ghosts used to be the drummer with Chaos Divine, so this is kind of his well, it's not really his new band, but it's a new band that he's in. And I went to see them play last Friday night for something that was billed as a digital EP launch. So they have new music. They have an EP out. It's a fantastic EP, by the way. You all should go and listen to it.
Absolutely.
But they have not and will not be chipping any physical CDs for this EP. What do you think about an approach like this, Dave?
I think it's a good idea. Particularly in today's day and age. I have said this for ages. It's all great. It's all wonderful and fantastic to, you know, want to make an album, and hell, I'm making two at the moment, right? Plus other stuff that I'm working on with guys from Code Atlantic and some of the guys from Nothing Like You and blah, blah, blah. You want to make an album, right? As a muso, you've got like all these things and running around. It's like, cool, I'll make like an 11-track album and I'll get it all printed and blah, blah, blah. No one buys albums. Right. Unless they're a diehard fan, and then they buy like, you know, the special editions and everything like that. So you're better off having a digital launch, telling everyone, okay, go and buy our shit on Bandcamp. Sling us $5.
Or even sling them $5 at the gig. The digital EP is Name Your Price.
Yeah.
There is no set price for this EP. It is Name Your Price.
Well, we know that that's worked previously with people like Radiohead and such, but that being said, 100%. It's Radiohead, not a local band.
Exactly.
Perth.
Yes.
But I think it's a much better way to do it. Release singles, get to a point where you can actually have an album, and then go for it. Because I think one of the things a lot of people tend to forget, even if you go back to, and dare I say, the Beatles again, go back to the Beatles, right? They were playing basically skiffle music and writing songs and all this sort of stuff in England. And then they fucked off to Germany for a year, had a residency, played live 3 times a day, 7 days a week, right? And then came back to England, and they were head and shoulders above everyone.
Because of playing live. Yes.
Because they were playing live, and then they put all the songs down, and then the rest is history, as we know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is how these bands form, right? This is how you get it by playing live. You get it by, you know, and yes, okay, there are some bands like, for example, James Norbert Iovanni or, you know, Pliny, et cetera, where you got these guys, or even Joshua Batten, I should say. You know, you get all of those things where they write basically all the parts and then they get musos in to play stuff and all that sort of stuff, which is a great way of doing it as well. But you got to have a kick-ass media machine behind you to actually push that out. But the reality still stands, no one buys an album now. So you need to find a way to conquer that. And I really think this is actually a fantastic way to do it. Release singles, you know, have media presence and get to the point where people will actually want to use you. Or actually want to go and see you. You know, the guys from Frog Leap Studios do that. Leo from over in Sweden or wherever he's from. You know, Our Last Night got famous off the back of a Skyfall cover that they did online. You know, a lot of these guys are getting famous through the things that they're doing online, releasing singles and so on and so forth, and then they're getting through that. And even then, they're still not earning a whole bunch of money.
But, no.
You know, at least but they're
even doing what
even
they enjoy. even at the other end of the market, Weird Al Yankovic himself has said,
yep,
probably not going to do albums anymore.
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't make sense.
He can,
you know, get on the zeitgeist. Oh, you know, this song is big right now. Make a parody, push it out, you know, make a funny video clip as well, and get his coverage online.
Absolutely. And that's
that works for him specifically.
But it works for many bands as well.
Yeah. You take someone like Marillion, for example, the album works for them. They get not doing, you know, they have obviously a very large, very dedicated fan base who do like the album format.
Mm.
But they have talked about it. They did talk about releasing like a series of EPs.
Mm-hmm.
instead of like a full record.
But again, you're talking about a very established band.
I was going to say, very established, very large, very loyal fan base as well.
Exactly. So, yeah, so look, I genuinely think it's a good way to do it. And I think it's a really good idea then to have the single launches. I mean, the guys from Red Gazelle are doing it.
They're doing a digital, are they? Or single launch?
Single launches.
Single launches are a thing. They've obviously
always
been a
thing. No, but I'm pretty sure they're digital as well. I'm pretty sure it's not.
Okay.
I don't think they've got a hard copy.
Yeah,
I
understand from a purely economic point why you wouldn't want to chip CDs, because chipping CDs ain't cheap.
No, it's not.
And, you know, then you got to print covers and pay people to design art.
I was about to say, you got to pay someone to design the artwork.
Designer yourself, which, you know, some bands do have people that, you know, are graphic designers themselves. So
yeah. Well, I did the last Nothing Like You cover as well. That was all
okay.
That was all me. But I'm not a graphic designer. I just knew what looked good.
Yeah,
and it took me a lot longer to do it than I probably should have, but is what it is. So.
Well, that's how it works. When if you want it done quickly and you want it to, you know, if you want it done quickly, then you want to pay. Then you pay someone. But if you're not in a position to pay someone, and you really should be paying someone as well. If you're, you know, work for exposure. I mean, people die of exposure, but.
I like that. Next time someone tells me they're going to work for exposure, I'm going to say, mate, people die of that. Fuck off.
Well, the thing I used to do is when we work for exposure is I used to just pick up my phone and go, hello, MasterCard, can I pay my credit card bill with exposure?
Yeah.
What do you mean no? What do you mean no?
Exactly.
That was my whole bit that I used to do when people used to tell me about working for exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You could just say, people die of exposure.
No.
Yeah.
So, so there we have it. I think that's just about it for this episode, isn't it?
Unless you want to give each other some albums to review.
Oh, that's a good point. We should just move on to that. So that's what we do. But with singles and all that sort of stuff, it actually brings us very neatly to our album reviews. It is the return of the album reviews.
This needs an intro bit as well, I think.
So album reviews, the last album review I think we had, what was the last one we had actually? We didn't do one. Ah, yeah, because you were going away and it would have been too weird to do things.
Yes, exactly.
So, okay.
I did listen to most of the album reviews that you did with the various artists that you interviewed. I know you did one with Matt from Code Atlantic. You did At the Reality by Accord, which we have talked about on the show before.
Yes, we have.
So definitely listen to that one. I haven't listened to Fair to Midland yet, though. But that's on the list, definitely on the list.
Yep,
and you had another one that you mentioned with Dale, Oliver Arnalds, and Bill Lawrence.
Yes.
I did listen to the Bill Lawrence record. That one is quite cool.
It is, yeah.
I enjoyed that one. So what have you got for me this time?
Well, I was going through my Spotify, recommendations. for a couple of weeks ago, and I heard this song by a band called Magic Pie. Are you familiar with these guys?
I am not.
So they are a prog rock band from, I believe, it's like the Netherlands or Sweden or somewhere like
Norwegian.
That. Norwegian. There you go. So somewhere up there. They're releasing a new album on the 30th of this month. Poor bastards. And the lead single off that is called The Man Who Had It All. So I'm actually giving you a single today, which will be this one, The Man Who Had It All. There's also another one. You can listen to the other single that they've released from this album as well, which is called P&C. They actually released that 2 days ago as time of recording, so August 7th, released it. But these guys are really, really cool, and I think you'll really like them.
Okay, fair
so
enough.
So what have you got for me?
So for you, I have a band from Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Odd Crew. Now, I was trying to find a studio album to recommend you, but for various reasons, I'm just going to give you their live album, Live at Hristo Botev Hall.
Okay.
I saw these guys live. These guys open for Dream Theater in Bulgaria. We'll get onto this on the other show, but there's a bit of a controversy surrounding that whole European tour, which we will get to on the other show,
mm-hmm.
Which led to these guys opening for them.
Mm-hmm.
They are fantastic live,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think you should listen to their live album so you can get the kind of energy and the feel of the place. They recorded this in what is essentially a classical music hall.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, Odd Crew live at Hristo Botev Hall.
Okay. Awesome. I'll have to check that one out. So that I think that about wraps it up for this episode. Now, as Hoggy mentioned at the top of the episode, we are going to be releasing two episodes this week. One obviously today on the normal release day, and then there'll be one in a couple of days' time, partly so I can get the editing done because I'm only a one-man operation. And with work and everything else like that in between, it makes it a bit difficult. But also so we can make sure we bring – you know, the correct conversations and such to you guys, the listeners, which is absolutely fantastic. We're all still here, and we're growing, actually, which is absolutely brilliant.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's great that we've got so many people out there listening and listening to us talk about all this stuff in Australia.
If there are things that you want us to talk about that we're not covering, please get in touch with us. Send us feedback. We love reading emails. We love reading feedback from all of you.
Absolutely.
Please get in touch. There is a link on our website, the98podcast.fireside.fm.
Mm-hmm.
You can find a link there. Click on the link. Send us a message. We do read all the feedback that comes into the show.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's something that we're not talking about that you want to hear, our opinions on a topic or your band or whatever.
Absolutely.
Send us some feedback.
Yeah, and if you've got a band that you want us to review, you want us to review your band's single or something, send it through. We will absolutely do it for you. It's all great. Now, the next episode, Hoggy, what are we going to be talking about on this next sort of bonus episode that we're going to be throwing out in a couple of days' time?
We're going to be talking about my holiday. But we're not just going to be running through my whole holiday. I saw a lot of bands on this holiday.
Mm-hmm.
There are bands that I've seen before, King Crimson, for example, mm-hmm, Phil
mm-hmm.
Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly not going to be talking about those because, frankly, we don't need to. You don't need to hear me talk about how great King Crimson is again. We have a whole show that I did last summer about that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about a whole bunch of bands that I saw, a lot of opening bands that are really, really cool, a lot of bands you may not necessarily have heard of. We're going to be talking about those and lots of links to lots of bands. So if you want to hear that and you really, like, I know a lot of people out there say to me, oh, you know, where do I find new music? Well, part of the show was trying to get us to get people out and get people listening to new music. So if that's the sort of thing you want to hear, stay tuned for the next episode coming out in a few days' time.
Absolutely. So we will see you in a couple of days' time on the next episode of the 9-8 Podcast.
See you then.